Hey, Becker, Scotty, big week, a lot going on in the world of the Beatles this week, don't you think?
It's odd that it always falls in your favor like that.
I know, and it is a lot. I mean, we sit here tonight, first of all, big night for us, recording on the evening of John Lennon's birthday. I think he would have been celebrating his 81st birthday today,
Wow,
which,
81.
yeah, big
That's
deal.
crazy to think.
And I also don't think we've talked about this, but Billy Preston, who we all know played on some later Beatles tracks, is finally getting inducted in the coming weeks into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I think we all agree so well deserved, so long overdue.
Yeah, he's
I'm
amazing.
so glad he's getting that recognition. Yeah, and then finally, obviously today, as we all know, marks the day that a Beatle came across the pond to sit down with some musicians of extremely high regard, some of them American, some of them Canadian, to jam and craft what would be someday known as some of the most treasured songs in rock history, right?
Nah, I'm not sure. I don't doesn't ring a
You don't
bell.
remember a Beatle jamming with a can a, you know some Canadians, some Americans? You don't remember any of this?
Well, like the band and Dylan.
Scotty, you know I've said this before, that those tapes should have been left in the basement, first of all. I know
Do
you're
you
talking
say
about
that?
that the George all the time. You're talking about that George Harrison debacle where he came across. No. I'm talking about in 2001, friends, when Ringo Starr got together with famed skate punk queen Avril Lavigne. I think they actually penned the hit Skater Boy. And you didn't know this? That they got together. Ringo, I think, wrote the original lyrics. He was a skater boy. He said, "See you later, boy. After the 20th of October, I will no longer be accepting invitations from the skater boy."
Good evening, my Blotto Scruffs. Thank you for tuning in on this wonderful fall evening. Please consider this permission granted to hop aboard our yellow submarine tonight. We recommend you batten the hatches as things are going to get pretty Georgie as we tap into your great guest and friend from our past. And more on that in just a couple of minutes. You know, I just want to welcome you back to Blotto Beatles. We're celebrated the world over as the leading alcoholic academics of Beatles broadcasting. I'm Becker, and you just entered episode 35. As a reminder, we are the podcast where a couple of friends have a couple of drinks and come together to discuss and rank a single Beatles song. Those friends are my good buds and yours. It's Tommy.
Tommy. Turning face. What's going on, guys? How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you, my man?
I'm good. I was doing that hardcore research on the Avril Lavigne Ringo collab that we all know about earlier.
You must have been
Do you know,
knee deep in the card catalog.
One thing I realized today for the first time is so Ringo Starr posted that No More Fan Mail video where he says, "As of October 20th, I will no longer be accepting fan mail." And I just realized today it was posted on YouTube on October 21st. So it's like a post-dated check or something.
I meant to say in the upfront that, and I probably need to edit some of my boilerplate here, but we are now an award-winning podcast.
We are an award-winning podcast. And,
yeah.
You know, this
I mean, we
brings
basically
about
won second prize in a beauty contest.
this brings about something very important. And I personally, man, I want to bring someone else into the room. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring into the room an award winner right now. Okay. This man... He's known, he's beloved around the world. He created the theme song to this podcast. This award-winning theme song, created, crafted, assembled by none other. Put your hands together. Let's get ready to rumble for Scotty C.
Yeah, man. Really
Scott,
nicely done. Really nicely
You know, the
done.
Thing about the Rocky movie, let's all remember... Rocky won. That is the greatest second place finish of all time.
I don't get it. Why are we talking about Rocky?
Because we won second place, shared second place with our friends from Ranking the Beatles in the Teatles, I'm hoping first annual, Best of Beatles Podcast Theme Songs Contest. Yeah. And Scott, man, you did some yeoman's work in putting together what I truly believe is the finest podcast theme song of all time, Beatles or otherwise.
Yeah, number one in our hearts.
Right? How do you feel about your award, man? Your shared second place award.
Well, you know, second place is first loser.
But that's, we have right. to remember, Rocky got second place. True. In that first movie. And look at him. He comes out on top. He gets that robot. In is that Rocky IV when he's got that robot running around giving him and Polly Pepsis? So that could be you just a couple years from now.
True. All right, I need to look at it from a Rocky perspective. You're right.
That's how I live my. I look at everything from a Rocky perspective.
Yeah. So it was really great. Hugh from the Teatles zine and the Twitter feed had a bit of fun, and he ranked like I don't know 15 or 20 Beatles podcasts. We were sharing the results internally. He was posting them like every 40 minutes or so, and I was sharing them. Scotty's not on Twitter. And Scotty's like, how many Beatles pods are there? but that was fun. And, you know, we share it with Ranking the Beatles, who are our pod brothers and sisters. So I think that's a...
Those are our original pod pals, for sure.
Yes, yes.
And I like to see anyone just having like some fun with Beatles podcasting, because that's kind of what we're all about. So I'd love to be in the mix of that stuff. So appreciate... any time or thought that they put into that. It's great.
Any time or thought. Doom, 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 doom. Any time or thought.
We have a great guest, so we should only goof around so much before we allow him to goof with us, right?
Absolutely.
I have a little bit of housekeeping, but before we get into that, is there anything else you boys want to cover off on?
It's got to be back.
Our guest can't hear us if you want to talk about him. Get that out of the way. You got a bone to pick.
In the green room. No, I'm ready to get going here. I'm just happy to be back. It's been a few weeks for us. You know, sometimes it feels like shaking off the rust a little bit after a few weeks off. But I'm feeling great right now. I'm ready to roll.
That's that rockabilly Neil Young record, right? Shaking off the rust.
Yeah, shaking off the rust.
So, just a little housekeeping. We've got some great messages over the last couple of days, so I want to highlight that. We got a lovely email from a Keith out in California. Mm-hmm. But this Keith has the same name with the singer from Black Flag and the singer from Circle Jerks. When I got the email at first, I was like, "Oh, this is
Keith Morris. We made it."
And so, but it's a different Keith Morris, but no less. He sent us a note that he loves the Beatles. He loves the show. He said he's a huge fan, and he loves having a couple of cocktails. So the show is absolutely in his wheelhouse. I really appreciate that he dropped us a note. He also told us that Another Kind of Mine, which is a great podcast, if you haven't heard it. They recently had an episode, and there's a recording in there of John Lennon and May Pang drunk together, getting into something. So he mentioned that we should check that out. I feel like I'm vaguely aware of this tape, or that I've read about it written in a biography or something like that, but I don't think I've heard it. So I want to go check that out for sure. And then we got a couple of messages on the drunk dial line, but we got a text, and this one is probably my favorite. And it goes, "Hey, I like your podcast! ! And you think like, oh, this is going really well. You know, this is very nice.
Let me read them.
Yeah. I hope to achieve the level of absurd stupidity that you guys accomplish on my own show. So okay. I took it really complimentary. I believe I responded complimentarily, and he was very nice, or they were very nice, and we went back and forth a little bit. They're thinking about starting their own Beatles pod, and I welcome that. I said they should drop us a link as soon as that's out in the world. So
I'm just glad they didn't say, "Hey, I like your podcast, but I have something to tell you about your car insurance."
That's contact the messages me immediately. We are getting on the drunk dial line, if I'm being honest. Anyone who stops and takes a second and drops us a line, and you know, I appreciate it a ton. We share it amongst ourselves as messages come in on our private chat, and I think, you know, it makes my day to see any messages like that. So,
and for $5,000 a year, we will add you to the private chat if you want to know what that's all about. Go to our Patreon.
You have to sign some serious NDAs.
Yeah. Hey Becker, do you think we should introduce the fourth man in the room tonight? You think it's time?
So patient.
Very patient. As always. And this is a guy we go way back with. Becker and Scotty and I, with our friend Paul as well, and our guest Tim, who's coming on in a minute, played in a band for a bunch of years together, and played shows and recorded songs, which was really how we got to know Tim when he was living back in Massachusetts. He's since moved out to California, to Southern California, with his wife and child. We haven't seen each other in a few years, but it was amazing when we started up the podcast. He was one of the first people to reach out and just be like, hey, we haven't talked in a long time, but I love this. I love what you're doing. And when we think about, I think, having friends together in the room, as soon as he reached out, we all said, this is one of those friends we want in the room with us, one that we want to bring to the virtual bar here to do an episode. He's one of the most technically amazing guitar and otherwise musicians I've ever seen in my life. I'm going to be honest about that, and he's laughing right now, but it's absolutely true. He's also forging a career newly as a luthier, I think, making his own instruments, that's right? Very impressive, and maybe he'll talk a little bit about those things, but we welcome our very good friend, Tim Clark, to the pod. Welcome, buddy. Great to see you
coming on, bud. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Your luthiering work, is it luthiering? Luthier?
I haven't gotten to the advanced courses where they teach me how to say it yet, so I actually don't know.
You just call it guitar making right now?
Yeah, Lutheran, I don't know. I think I'm a Lutheran now.
You're playing one of them stomach fills.
Yeah. Wait, is this just a new religion you're into?
Yeah, you guys got the message wrong.
Luthentology,
I started taking a class early last year from some guys in Southern California. There's this group called SimsCal, which is Stringed Instrument Makers of Southern California. It's pretty cool. I'm building my first acoustic guitar. It was supposed to be done in 6 months, and then something happened where we had to put it on hold for a year, something to do with a pandemic. I don't read the news. I'm weird. Not really sure.
California. Sounds like the West Coast is in rough shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm back at it, and I'm pretty close to finishing it. So maybe a couple more weeks, I'll have something to show.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. I've seen some of the pictures you've put on Instagram. It looks pretty amazing that you're doing that work.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot for like a first time wood project.
I'm not going to like them until you actually show a finished guitar. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah.
He's only putting this raw pieces of wood right now and telling us it's going to be a guitar. So I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it. It's pictures of trees.
Yeah, I'm just nailing some strings to them.
What did you pick for back for like top side back materials?
So the top is spruce, the back and sides are rosewood, next mahogany.
Yeah.
And that's mostly it. And I'm using some variation of those for all the little finishing pieces and stuff.
Cool.
It's pretty standard first build stuff. So
what would be the first song you would play on a guitar you built?
First chord.
Oh, geez. God, it's got to be something like Freebird, right? It's got to be something just like completely.
That's what all the other guitar makers are yelling as soon as you put it up.
Play Freebird. I thought you're throwing some like Yngwie or something. You're like,
yeah,
it's an acoustic guitar, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably, more than words or something.
Yeah, more.
No, I want acoustic Yngwie Malmsteen. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
It's got a super deep cutaway, so I think you can pull that off. We're not a podcast here to talk about guitar making, but it's nice that you know how to do that. Tim, do you like the Beatles?
I would say I am a fan.
Wait, let's do another take where you sound more enthusiastic. Give it to me more.
I heard of him.
No, I do know you are a fan. I'm joking with you. You're a huge fan.
Are you guys fans? I think.
Yeah.
Not since I started doing this podcast. tell us a little bit about your origin story of the Beatles. When did you hear them? Was it your parents? What did you find on your own?
So I was pretty young when I first heard them. My earliest memories are like listening on headphones with my dad to like Sgt. Pepper and stuff like that. And I was probably like 7 years old or 6 years old or something. And
like him trying to turn you on to this? Like he was like, you should know about this type thing?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. He was a little, you know, he was, I think he was like that guy who's like trying to turn me into like a hipster kid. So he's just like, oh, these records are great, kid. You know, it's showing me like, you know, that kind of stuff real early on. But he used to, I remember he had like this old acoustic guitar, and when he would put me to bed at night, he would sit at the foot of my bed and he would sing like Blackbird and Rocky Raccoon and stuff like that when I went to bed. And those are like some of my earliest, you know, memories of him.
That's amazing. Is,
yeah. So
he'd torture you with that Rocky Raccoon stuff, but
you know,
Blackbird sounds nice.
Is he, is your dad's name Paul McCartney?
No, that's
it was weird when he got into temporary secretary.
I mean, yeah when he started singing stuff from Ringo 4, it was but
that's cool.
So I remember like, and I was like ruthlessly like I was a Beatles dork at a very young age, and I let every kid at school know that I was a Beatles dork. It was like my identity when I was in third or fourth grade, and it was rough. I had a rough time of it, but yeah, it's stuck with me over the years. I've been a big fan for a long time.
It's a funny point that you say that, because I've asked some of the younger podcasters and Beatles fans that we talked about. I'm like, oh, do you ever get any guff for being just like so Beatlesy, right? Like in 2020, like they're going to school and being like, I love the Beatles, and they're not getting a ton of guff. But I remember feeling a little bit like maybe what you're saying, where like I just was into the Beatles and I wanted to talk about the Beatles in grade school and stuff. And then I don't know, I started hiding it a little bit. Like I later got into alternative and punk rock and all these things. And then I kind of, I hid the Beatles for a bit, which I'm more ashamed about now, but
yeah. Well, it was definitely that age where it's like, you know, everyone else is singing the Vanilla Ice lyrics, and I'm coming on being like, oh, you guys, you should totally listen to Bungalow Bill or whatever. And it's, you know, I was very uncool.
But have you heard Being for the Benefit of Mr. Cunt? People. Baby. What do you think?
Which
now
reminds me, I might have a Vanilla Ice tie into tonight's song. But,
oh, all right. Perfect. Wow. What do you think, Tim,
Oh, go ahead.
What do you think now is like your go-to Beatles record or song? You know, like
what is your lifetime number one jam or record or whatever? Yeah,
I mean, I go back to the White Album over and over. I mean, there's so much there, and it's not all you know perfect, but it's all interesting. Right. And there's so many different things happening on that one record. It's like that to me is like my Desert Island record. Like I could keep listening to that and get enjoyment out of it because there's just so much on it. So, I mean, that's what I keep going back to. And some of the songs on there, like, you know, and I'm still finding things, you know, at my age where there's songs that have slipped through the cracks just enough that I'm appreciating them like newly now. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, Savoy Truffle. It's a song that I never really used to listen to that much back in the day. And now I'm like, this is a fucking great song. And I'm just, you know, really getting into it in a way that I never did before. Which is that's kind of a testament to that record. And I don't think any of the other records I go back to nearly as much as that one.
Do you think tonight's song falls in that category of ones that it took you a while to pick out? Or was this an early year find for you?
It was a little of both in a way. Like I knew of it when I was really young, but I think I forgot about it for a long time and sort of revisited it when I had my like post 20s, like I'm going to go real deep into the catalog and look at bootlegs and all these kinds of things. Right. When I went through that phase, I kind of rediscovered the song then, but I kind of forgot about it for a long time.
All right. So come back after the break to find out what that song is. Yeah. Right after these words. We got all those ads ready, right? We got that Casper mattress thing coming up now, and Squarespace, right?
Squarespace, right? Yeah. Squarespace.
Squarespace, I like that. Like a Minecraft thing.
Tim, who's your boy?
Who's my boy? Oh, geez. So yeah, I kind of knew that question was coming, and I wrestled with it a little bit. You know, I've always
you can never take it back once you say it.
I know.
On the podcast. I know. This goes directly to the Library of Congress. It goes on your CV.
I know. I'm gonna have to answer for this.
Being Lutheran now, you'd be careful.
Lutheran.
Someone's going to cut a Rickenbacker hole in that guitar.
I'm definitely a John guy.
Like an apple? Yeah. Isn't that what?
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Right. You're saying John?
I think I got to go with John. I mean, like, there's something that's really kind of fit with my angsty years with John, right? Because he's super angsty and he's got his, like, things that he's dealing with and stuff. But I really gravitate towards that kind of introspective, like, you know, especially his later stuff, right? Like, White Album through Imagine is, like, you can't touch any of the stuff that he wrote on those records, because it's like he recognized that there was something really messed up about him, and he was like, I'm going to dive deep, and I'm going to work on it, and I'm going to try and be a better person. You could hear that in his music, and you can hear that in a lot of his interviews and the things he's trying to do. And he made missteps along the way. He definitely did some things that, you know, aren't great as a person, but just that constant, like, growth mindset that he had and the way that kind of self-reflection came out in his music, it's just like, I'm always going to go for that above everybody else. George these days is like, I feel a little bit more on his level, but yeah. Still, I keep going back to the John stuff.
I figured you were going to say George. I mean, certainly with your pick today, but I thought you were going to go George. But that's,
yeah,
that's probably one of the better endorsements of Lennon that we've had on
this. Yeah, show. That's an amazing take.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Plastic Ono Band, for my money, is probably the best solo record of the Beatles for me. And I know you guys are all Things Must Pass guys. Like,
no,
that's
no jam, but I agree with you,
I'm a Plastic Ono guy myself.
Yeah, I do. It's like 1-1-8. I also put, like, Ram in the trifecta there of, yep, like, but I think those other two rise above Ram.
Yeah. There's a really great book that came out this year, like a massive hardcover book on Plastic Ono Band that's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that record. I think it's so great. There's not a bad song on it.
I've been listening forever to the digital the recent digital version that's been out or on Spotify or whatever, and it sounds so good. And then I put on my original copy of Plastic Ono Band the other day because my dad had never listened to this record, and it just sounded like garbage. I gotta buy this new version. Like, I just have a shitty old pressing of it, and I'm like, oh, this isn't, you know. My dad is also thinks I'm an idiot for buying vinyl, period. But I'm like, yeah, you haven't listened to Plastic Ono Band, and it just sounded like garbage on my turntable. And so I gotta upgrade my copy of that one. But I love that record for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're talking about those two records side by side, Plastic Ono and All Things Must Pass, I think the plus on Plastic Ono's side is it's not quite as, like, sprawling or something, like not being a double record, like it's a little more finite. It's a little, like, focused affair.
And it's, like, it really three or four people doing the song.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very intimate and very, very personal, like Tim was saying, with the way John is in general. And I remember falling asleep as a teenager with that cassette in my headphones, just going through that whole album.
Just falling asleep to Primal Scream Therapy.
Yeah.
Hey, Becker, sounds like Tim has a little bit of a history with the Beatles. But you know what I've heard? It sounds like there was maybe some bullying going on in grade school. I didn't like that. But what I also know about bullying is that sometimes people block out traumatic memories from it. So maybe he forgets actually who the Beatles are. Do you think that's there's some potential behind that?
I mean, yeah.
It's getting a little dark talking about bullying. I don't like to, but I want to be real here. I want to be authentic on this podcast. So I'm going to ask you to just introduce to us who are the Beatles.
Sure. I would love to. Finally, I was really excited to see in my research that this is a band of brothers that really get along, which isn't typically what I find, you know? So they're hailed as one of the most influential bands to come out of the 1960s. They were reared north of London. Apparently, they stormed the beaches of our great country in something called the British Invasion. But they scored the first international hit to feature distorted guitar and lit the torches of a million bands that are still copying their work to this day. The Beatles are Ray, Dave, Mick, and Pete.
Nope.
And couple of big records. Tommy, do you like the Bungalow Village Green Preservation Society? Or do you prefer Drive My Carther or The Decline and Fall of the British Empire? There's a couple of great hits in there. I think that you would like Tired of Waiting for Jude, Sour Milk Sea of Friends, Paul is Dedicated Follower of Fashion, Obla Di Ola 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 Lola, Obla Di Olola. Or this is my favorite. I think we all, you know my name, Water Luke up my number.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
It was a rough week.
Yeah.
I had a rough work week, but
that's Tommy. Not the Beatles. I'm pretty sure that you are talking about the Kinks at this point, right?
Don't know them.
You ever heard of them?
No.
No? Tim, have you heard of them?
Yeah, I think I've heard of them. Yeah.
You've heard of the Kinks. How do you feel about the Kinks?
Do you like them? Oh, I love the Kinks. They're great. Yeah. Village Green is such a killer record. Love that.
Yeah.
Power Man's just a great song. Yeah. I mean, I haven't gone super deep with them, but Village Green is, I've got it on vinyl. I listen to it all the time. It's one of my favorite
Tim,
records.
Tim, do you want to start like a drinking Kinks cast with me?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe we'll, because I need to do the research. It sounds like you've done the research. I've done the drinking. And so maybe we call it Pina Colola.
Oh, good.
What do you think?
That's up.
You want to?
Yes, that's great. No.
I thought maybe we could do one where we talk sort of in Renaissance times and wear Renaissance clothes, and we would call it You Really Got Mead.
That's got great guitar, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone said, I said, what's a good band we could do for Tim? And both of these guys said we should do Yes. And
I did not.
Oh, yeah.
I said I think he likes
Yes. I said I'm pretty sure Tim's a Yes fan. He's a
Yes guy.
When
you guys knew me, yeah, I was big into that art rock, geeky stuff for sure. I've definitely listened to a lot less of that in recent years. But
bless Yes,
he moves to California and leaves his Yes behind.
Yeah.
Now he's like, I'm
surfing, Tim. I don't listen to Yes.
I got out here and it was like, oh, it's all about Black Flag, I guess.
Yeah, you guys like Jack Johnson.
Yeah. You ever listen to Blink 182?
No doubt.
No, yeah. I mean, no, but but yeah, back in the day, I mean, Yes and Genesis and all that stuff was my jam. I love
And
that
so
stuff.
I really chicken I should I've got some Genesis in the can and I totally forgot. I forgot that I've got a backlog of Genesis. And I'm like, oh, if he was going to accept Yes, like we could have gotten the Genesis route. So
yeah, that would have worked
tuned,
for me.
Stay tuned, everyone.
That would have worked for me. Genesis. But the Kinks works too, because like I did this whole, you know, I went really into the progressive rock, art rock stuff for a few years, and then I went back into the psychedelic stuff for a bunch. And like the Kinks in that kind of psychedelic period, like, you know, 67 through 70, did some amazing records. You know, the Zombies, a bunch of bands like that I was super into for a while.
We had just done Pink Floyd, but I knew that you and I had talked about in the past about, I think, the Piper at the Gates of Dawn record, which I think and I remember talking about that at some point. I think the reissue had come out on CD, that cool package. But I took it because I looked at your Instagram and you had posted a wall of records that you had hung up in your house, and I saw the King in there. You had the Richard Swift record in there, which I think is great, but I'm not gonna. No one wants to riff on Richard Swift, and I think
it's kind of obscure.
You had the which I really like. I was gonna go down the Graham Parsons route because I think you had the Yellow Submarine or the Submarine International Band. What is?
International
Submarine Band.
Yeah.
And that is a really great record, but then I'm like, I don't know if I have enough Graham Parsons yucks, but so I went the path of the Kinks. You know, they're the contemporaries of the Beatles. I think that they're pretty interesting from that perspective, and I think it's pretty interesting that they generally just sort of hate each other. Like, they come from this angle of like having played together and played together so early, but like Dave Davies calls Lennon like kind of a bully. Like, they said that they were like mean to him, like when they would play shows together. Like, the Kinks wanted to see the Beatles guitars. I guess that was a big thing when they first played together, and they were like, oh, we want to see the guitars that you guys are playing with. And John Lennon was like, don't touch the guitars. Like, they weren't letting them like touch them at all. And they were telling, or they were saying that you're like just our opening act, and like kind of this sort of meanish schoolboy type stuff. I mean, we were talking about bullying. Like, it seems almost bullyish in a way, but I think there's a funny, probably competitiveness that comes out of, you know, when you're younger and playing in bands, it does feel like a competition to get shows and certainly to be like the biggest band, you know, in the UK,
the bill or
and,
whatever.
Then,
yeah.
and then come to yeah. the States. It's probably a big competition, but there were a couple other things I found that I thought were interesting, but McCartney remarks that he wished that he had wrote See My Friends, and then Lennon backs that up later in sort of an anecdote that he says See My Friends had a bunch of inspiration on the Revolver record, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That's cool.
And almost makes sense in a way when you think about it. And then the other piece that I had never thought before is that the Kinks had written Waterloo Sunset as a retort to Penny Lane, which I think is almost what separates the Beatles and the Kinks in a way, where it's like, this is like Waterloo Sunset, I feel, is kind of like a pessimistic tune versus sort of Paul's Penny Lane romanticizing of his youth. You know, maybe that's somewhere where I draw the line of the Kinks and the Beatles, but I had never, I'd never seen that proposed. I hadn't dove that deep into this Beatles versus Kinks stuff, but I thought those were some interesting points.
Yeah. I always got a sense that it was, you know, the British invasion was very much, you know, the Beatles and the Stones and then everybody else, right? And the Kinks were very much like not in the same sphere.
Might as well have been Herman's Hermits, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the same with the Who and stuff, even though they were massive stars in their own right. Yeah. You know, they just were never really...
Well, especially early in the 60s or whatever, like, or mid-60s, whatever, when the Who come over, yeah.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining them running in circles together very much in the 60s until, you know... some of the bands kind of like, because the Kinks, I don't know if the Kinks in the States were as big as they were in Britain in the 60s. I think that like things like Lola and you know, that kind of stuff that they did in the late 60s, early 70s is really what broke them through in the US. But I don't know. I'm not the scholar. I don't know if that's true, but I think that's true.
We're here to talk about it, so that doesn't matter. Yeah. You feel it? You feel it, it's true on Bono Beatles. So yeah.
We're all scholars.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kinks also suffer probably from the other side of it is they suffer from having made music too long and just having like too many like lineups and players and all of that stuff. Like when I went back to look at like who's the original besides Ray and Dave, I'm like, who are the original Kinks? Like there's like 30 people on the Wikipedia that are like, oh, we played as a Kink because they play into the like the 80s as the Kinks, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And that's tough. And that's, you know, I mean, I don't think we like it in the Stones. And it answers a bit above like, why do we love the Beatles so much? Because it starts and ends in a way. You know, like we can argue and fight and have fun with all of the solo stuff. But like, why is it fun to have a podcast about the Beatles? Because it starts and ends. For us, it ends in like 7 years when we finish this podcast, I guess. But I think that's there's something to that for sure.
They also didn't have the number of breakthrough hits, like even within a specific time period, right? Like what are the Kinks hits in the U.S.? Like You've Really Got a Hold on Me. You've Really Got a Hold on Me. You know, that great Kinks song.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really got me.
You really got me. Yeah. You Really Got Me. Lola. Like
All Day and All
What
night.
Else is it? All Day and All Night, okay. Night. Yeah, that's true. Like, I love Strangers, but that's not a hit.
That is Tired of Waiting song. For You. Like, that might be a hit. I don't know.
Oh, that's
I'm not sure.
Song.
Yeah.
Yep. I think but those
you're
early,
talking about
like
a handful of songs that really like had huge radio play that people, the average listeners, like, I know this song. Even you want that thing that it's like, I know this song even if I don't know who it's by. Like, and they have a handful of those, and that's probably it, right?
That's pretty great, man.
Yeah, but I also think they, I mean, they go to a, like, Dave is probably, Dave's the writer, the singer-songer? Yeah. I think he goes to a place, like, he is kind of, he's writing, like, maybe a little wittier than the Beatles write, but he's also writing about sort of this, like, British class system in a way that I never sort of fully understand. Like, I don't really get it. I know everyone touches on it, and I'm just like, oh, we were talking about this place or that. And I don't know that translates to the U.S. at all until...
Till Johnny Rotten?
Or no, until Royal Tenenbaum's guy starts making, like, movies. And he's like, oh, all of these Kink songs work to, like, you know, all of these scenes that I'm putting together.
Yeah. We have them slow motion walking out of a graveyard and throw this Kink song on top of it.
This is a perfect place for Waterloo Sunset, you know, like...
Yeah.
Oh, one of the other Beatles songs that I had was I'm Clown. For Death of a Clown, and I'm Down. I thought that was pretty good.
held that in your pocket. That was the right move.
Anyways, love the Kinks, love the Beatles. Yes. I love Tim as our guest tonight.
Yes, yes. And I love what I'm drinking. How about you?
Wow. You guys in the transitions.
I love your so transitions. Love that? So
boom, smart. Hit it, nailed it. I did start the evening with a Manhattan made with some tin cup whiskey. This is like, I always thought it was kind of a cheesy looking whiskey bottle because it has like the little shot glass that comes on top of it or whatever. Yeah. But Scotty and I bought it, a bottle of it for our buddy Jay a couple years ago for his birthday and had a little taste out. It's a pretty smooth drink. So it made a good Manhattan.
Like a blend or something?
Yeah, it's just like an American whiskey blend, but it's, I like it. I think they're doing an okay thing.
Just okay.
I had a Manhattan. Okay, go. Which they always make great music videos, so you know that's good. And then for beers, I finished my Manhattan for
beers.
You've
had four beers?
No, F-O-R. I'm starting the evening with a Narragansett Fest beer, which, you know, I'm always happy to support the Narragansett brand out of Rhode Island. They are, you know, they've been around forever. I was looking for that Harpoon Flannel Friday beer today. I couldn't find it anywhere.
Buffalo Platinum.
And I, you know, fall's approaching. It's getting a little crisp out. I want like a maltier beer right now. I don't want the heavy hoppy stuff. Which is why I'm also glad to have, as always, in the holster, the Devil's Purse Handline Kolsch, the official beer of Blotto Beetles, ready to go. That. Not hoppy there, just drinkable. Becker, what do you have in your cups this evening?
Tonight I mixed up a fall cocktail. I've been drinking the Boulevardier, which is basically a Negroni with bourbon. And I've been using the Four Roses Small Batch Bourbon, which I am a tremendous fan. I think that's
you're
best.
An advocate of that.
The small batch, especially at the price point, like it is the, I think it's the best bourbon you're getting into that you can always find anywhere you're going. So don't fuck around with that too much. When I see it, I grab it if I'm indecisive. There's too much bourbon on the shelf. I don't know if we've talked about that too much, but you go there and there's all these fake crafty brands and all this stuff. And I don't want to wade through all of this. Like I don't want to spend $40 on a suspect bottle. So I always go straight to the Four Roses, but I started off tonight. Also, because it's a little chilly here in the Northeast. Tim doesn't know about this anymore because he abandoned us. But
8 seasons.
I started with Autumn Midnight by Winter Hill down the street, who are becoming some friends of mine. And this is a stout with pumpkin with cacao nibs. And so I started a little. I was doing my prep, and I cracked a dark beer, and it was actually really great. Like it felt perfect for the occasion. I love to listen to the tune right before we get on the microphone together, and I cracked this beer and it was absolutely perfect.
Excellent.
Very cool.
I don't think I can drink too many more dark beers tonight, but it was a good way to kick it off.
Yeah.
Scotty C, I saw you drinking from the bottle.
Yeah.
A baby bottle.
Good sound effects. I'm doing red wine again out of the bottle, and it's a screw top, cheap ass wine. It's a Syrah. It's from Washington State, the originals, I guess. I got it. It was $5.
What?
Nice.
Pretty good. For $5.
$5 for luck. I like it.
But I got the Slain for the shot. If we hit
for the mystery word. All right,
Timmy. Do you guys have drinks in California still?
We do. Yeah. I had to step it up. Usually I'm not very adventurous with my beers, but I was like, I'm in rare company tonight. I have to go out and, you know, pick up something really good. So I picked up there's two local breweries that I got stuff from. There's Offshoot Beer Company. This is called Unwind Hoppy Pills. I've never had this, but it's about 10 minutes from my house. So I was like, I got to try this.
Going local.
Yeah. It's that one was really good. And then I picked up an Ogopogo Bowman Belgian White Ale, which is also quite good. I know you can't
see it. Oh, nice koozie.
And I've got the, I'm repping the merch. I'm repping it. Go to blottobeetles.com to buy.
Timmy, do us a favor, too, and send us a picture, if you have any left over at the end of the evening, of cans, because we do like to throw them up on our social and give a shout-out to the people that are fueling the episode here.
Tim's Tim's 30 empties.
Yeah. I've got I've also I came across Maui Brewing Company's Coconut Porter. Have you guys ever had that?
I was in Hawaii and I started drinking that and I'm like, oh, this is how
I was in Hawaii.
Actually, same. Same. I saw it in the store today. I was like, oh shit, I had this I went on a vacation with my wife and we had it at the Maui Brewing Company.
Oh, look who else has been to Hawaii. Yeah.
So I was like, I got to pick this up. And in honor of Scotty, I did get some Jameson in case the word comes up.
Feeling like with a special guest like we have tonight, who's part of our history, I feel like the word is going to come up. I feel like this is when Scott makes it a little dangerous.
Well, you never know. What's dangerous? I think the word's going to come up and no one ever says it. Sometimes I think it'll never come up and you guys are hammered. It's hard to tell.
Early on, I guess it's also worth noting, early on, Tim Clark was the winner of one of the early listener sweepstakes we had that he got to pick the magical mystery word.
Oh, yeah.
And I whiffed it. I was so upset. I was so disappointed.
It was good. I felt like an idiot at the end when I think you did ghost or ghostly free as a bird.
Yeah, it was free as a bird. I was kind of going for like
it's that. Super. I can't believe we didn't say it. Like what podcast of merit are we that we're talking about the ghost of John Lennon on this song and we don't even say that.
I know. But you guys owe me a drink at least tonight. So.
Well, Tim, if we owe you a drink, I don't know if you've ever heard of the thing that takes place when two guitars play together in perfect harmony that we call guitarmony.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is an evergreen magical mystery word. And so we owed you one. Let's do it.
All right.
Wow.
I'm going to regret this. This will be good. All right.
Cheers, friends.
Oh, boy.
The Eternal Magical... That's actually a dirty play right there, that the Eternal Magical Mystery Word.
We owed him one. What are we going to do?
Yeah. What is your... While we're in the safe space, what is your favorite use of guitarmony, Tim, in all music?
Oh, God. I mean, Thin Lizzy, right?
Ooh. Yeah, that's pretty...
Jailbreak is just... That is nice. Such a killer record. You know, all of the guitar work on that is just unbelievable.
I want those boys to come back to town.
I know.
While we're talking about it, we have a special word that Scotty C pre-selects ahead of time, the magical mystery word. We're not aware of it, but if it comes up during the show, we're all obligated to take a shot. Scotty C, real quick, do you want to let the people at home know what tonight's magical mystery word is?
I will. Feedback.
All right, everybody, so that was this week's Magical Mystery Word, and now it's time to get into this week's pick, which Timmy pulled out, and Scott is going to tell us about. So, Scott, what are we talking about?
We used to call you Timmy, but now I feel like you're a Tim. Like, did you mature?
Oh, we should go Tim?
Does anyone call you Timmy?
Why am I still a Tommy, then?
So you're admitting that I wasn't an adult when we knew each other prior? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I remember you had bought, like, a Mega Man toy, so, I mean, that counts as being a kid.
I did. That's actually true. That was my little, like, yeah, that's true. I did do that.
No, we just called you Timmy, but now I see you as a Tim. I don't know why, you know. It's the beard, I think.
It's the beard. We all have beards now. I don't think Scotty and Tommy.
Yeah, we're men in our 40s. We all have beards now. That's
what I'm trying to hide this chin here.
It hides a multitude of sins.
Yeah. Yeah. We're four Wilco fans, therefore we have beards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Four white Wilco fans.
Couple dads talking Beatles.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Anyway, Scott, what's this week's pick?
This week's pick is from Tim. And we've talked to Tim about doing this for a while.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't too long ago they told me what it was. And the song he picked was It's All Too Much, which is a long tune for the Beatles and for even a lot of other bands, really. But
it's a long, 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 long song for George Harrison.
And it's off the Yellow Submarine. It's a George tune. It has a lot of his sort of Eastern influences, you know, the droney sort of thing, but it's not like all in that realm. He kind of brings the rock and roll instruments a little more at the forefront with this sort of theme or whatever. And apparently he was kind of losing interest in being a Beatle or being so famous or whatever. And it's all too much. Then also coincided with a lot of psychedelic experiences. So those two things together kind of like inspired, from what I read lyrically, this song where he's, you know, speaking about all these things. We'll talk about this a lot more, but he's also playing organ on this song, which is cool. And I know he was kind of in between guitar and sitar and then organ around this time. And he's, you know, that opening organ thing is it's like, yes. All right. What do we got going on here?
It's like the band. Yes.
No, no.
Oh, sorry.
It's like, it's like, yes, I like it. Like, what are we doing here? This isn't Beatles. This is like this weird organ thing going on. And it's subtle, but it's good. And also what's subtle and good are the vocals. He's hitting a real George vibe. And then he finds a couple spots where he really kind of like goes into a different space that I find really enjoyable. And they went into a different studio, Delane Leah or something. I'm not sure I'm going to say it right, but they couldn't get into Abbey Road. They went into another studio, no George Martin, and they get after this song, and they do a lot of like silly overdubs with like percussion and stuff. And I kind of just want to talk about this song more than anything, and also get Tim's take, and we should probably listen to it.
Yeah.
I think that's all I really want to say about it on the upfront, because I have other things to say, but I don't want to do it now.
Sure. So we are going to take a listen to it. Let's take a listen encourage everyone
and then talk to Tim, right? Yeah.
Yeah. We encourage everyone to hit pause on the podcast real quick. Take a listen yourselves and come back, and then we will talk about It's All Too Much from Yellow Submarine.
Can you believe that the Beatles can't get into EMI Abbey Road with George Martin,
right,
on like the day that Sgt. Pepper's album came out? Basically, it was, I think, when they're recording this. Like, I think the album has dropped and they're in the studio recording this stuff. It's like, what do you have to fucking do to get someone to drop everything and be like, where are the fucking Beatles?
It's like, sorry, someone's doing a comedy album in there today.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm sorry, I don't like to pipe
which
in.
Which, I mean,
early.
If it was us, I would get it. If we were in there and they're like, the Beatles want to come
first
in.
Line, no,
yeah, we're Blotto Beatles.
But Tim, what else could George Martin have been doing at that moment? Like, that's what I think is amazing.
All
but
right.
I'm sorry, I don't like to butt in.
Yeah, well, you, George Martin, blah, 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 blah.
No, we got to get the George Martin hate out right away. Just let Becker get it out of his system so we can get through the rest of the podcast. All right,
Tim, like, what made you pick it? How do you feel about this song? And we can springboard off of that.
Yeah. So this is a song that recently I've been visiting a lot. So I think that's kind of why it came to mind for this. But I've always really. Well, so yeah, when I was younger, I don't know if you guys remember this, but there used to be a period of time where like MTV, well, first of all, showed videos, but on the weekends, like on Saturday mornings, they would have a Beatles hour, or like a Beatles 2 hours.
Oh,
do you guys remember this?
No, I never knew. This
is back. This is like in the mid '80s, or like late '80s or something like that. And I remember this pretty vividly because that's where I saw the Yellow Submarine cartoon. Right.
All right.
Okay. Was on that. They also used to show that really crappy, you know, Beatles cartoon, like the half hour series,
which now I feel much warmer about than.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know, John. What are we gonna do?
I mean, the voices are great, but. Tommy, but
especially.
Yeah, but they used to play the Yellow Submarine cartoon. So I you know, at a pretty young age, I had seen it, and I sort of, you know, I listened recently to the podcast you guys did on All Together Now, and I know you're not as up to speed on the movie as I am, but there's a scene like right at the end of it where it's, you know, this is the song at the climax of the movie, right? Where everything really kind of comes together and all of these colors kind of get really kaleidoscopic and really beautiful. And it's just like this explosion of love and joy and all these wonderful, you know, 1967 Summer of Love type things, right? It just like really encapsulates that. So for me, this song, like, really, I have a really visual memory to watching the movie and that scene at the end of the movie and kind of how it relates to that. And then I like forgot about it because I hadn't watched the movie for like 10 years and I didn't have the Yellow Submarine album. And then in my 20s, I went and revisited the album and I heard it and I was like, oh, this song is killer. So yeah, there's a ton to like about it for me, right? Like the guitar part and the way the band is kind of flowing with each other and stuff. It's just, it's got such a good groove. And I think because it's a little less known, it still feels fresh to me, where a lot of the other Beatles stuff, maybe I feel like I've kind of done already, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's way less known. I mean, first of all, I think it got a bad rep for a long time as a Beatles tune. I think that people were sort of negative about it early on. I always read Revolution in the Head, the Ian McDonald book right before we go on, and he gives it a ton of grief. Then I feel like something happened.
Really nasty towards this,
Something happened in the 90s, and like there's like this psychedelic kind of lo-fi movement among indie bands and things like that, and then a bunch of people I liked started name-checking this tune and some of the other Harrison stuff sort of around this time period, and I think that brought it back for me in a big way, because I didn't pay too much attention at the time, and now it's like this big psychedelic piece that is super interesting to get into.
Yeah, I mean, those bands like the Flaming Lips or like, you know, My Bloody Valentine or Smashing Pumpkins, even with some of the guitar shit they do, it's like you can trace a line back to this song and some of the more wild things that are happening in it, more so than really any other Beatles song for me, right? Like, to me, they're like, there's not many moments in the Beatles catalog for me where they just feel so loose, where they're just sort of throwing stuff at the wall. And it's not like you get songs like Penny Lane, you get and whatever. And it's like a Baroque piece. It's like everything falls into place and they've got these specific melodies and counterpoints that they're trying to put forward. But this is just like, hey, I got this song. Let's go in and just see what happens and hit record and just,
it almost feels like it could have just been a jam that they throw lyrics on to a degree. Exactly. Right. Like, and you wonder, it's definitely a George tune. So I can't imagine if it were a jam, they'd be like, yeah, George, you write the lyrics to this.
No, George is bringing this in as a song.
He's bringing it in. Right. But it, like, there's that looseness, the feeling of it. Right?
But I think the feeling is coming from the fact that they're working on it in absence of it belonging to anything yet. Right. Like, I think they don't know that it belongs on Yellow Submarine. George Martin isn't in the studio at the moment. Like, they had just finished the sort of slog of getting through Sergeant Pepper's. Like, there is probably something free of just, and the Beatles and George Martin are not taking George Harrison's work as seriously, so he's coming in to do this song, and so everyone probably does feel a bit freer to make it this piece. They're in a different studio. That's like a basement studio.
Say what you want about Sergeant Pepper, every song is tight on Sergeant Pepper, right? Like, every note is precise, purposeful in some regard. Yeah. You know, like, every hit, every note, every trumpet thing. And this is like, okay, I think that's a great point. We're done with that. Like, now let's bring in, like, let's just play a tune and throw a bunch of shit on it and figure out what it sounds like and what happens and go from there.
What do you guys think? Who is playing guitar? I know John is for sure. Do you think that
that's
George added
something?
That's
a huge question, right?
Yeah, it's
might be
one.
Paul. Right, like, I've heard a lot about Paul perhaps playing the lead on this tune, which I think, and some people are like, it is definitely George on organ and John on guitar and Paul on bass. And then others are, there's some question of like, okay, George is definitely on organ. Do Paul and do Paul and John
play well together?
Flip flop. And do you know what's interesting? The thing that made me question that was, Scott, I'm going to put you on the spot here. The Taxman solo. So Paul McCartney plays the solo in Taxman, and if you listen to that, you can hear a lot of the solo from It's All Too Much, kind of like the style of his solo. I don't know if it's possible in this moment, Scotty, I did not prep you for this at all, to play a little of that Taxman solo.
Oh, I can do that. It's going to take me...
Yeah.
Scotty's grabbing a guitar from the shelf.
Yeah, let me just plug it in. I'm just gonna riff on...
Turn up his Big Muff. Oh, you're a Big Muff! That's what he says in the beginning, right? So I think, right? And that's Paul McCartney, and it's like this noodly thing. It is kind of chromatic in a way that George Harrison doesn't play that way. John Lennon, like, maybe... does at times, but like
that's
it does
what that's
sound
what's
like
in my notes for about the John stuff. I'm like, is John surprising us on guitar in a big way here?
Yeah.
Or I think
or
that
not?
John's
like,
a lot
sure.
better guitar player than
so I think it could really be either of them, you know. And it's funny, I guess in the again the little research I had done, George says like, oh no, it's definitely Paul playing that solo at one point. But then you've got these scholars who are going through the tapes and the notes who disagree, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you don't
McDonald
really,
and
seems to not be
friend of the pod, Ken Womack, disagrees. And
I disagree. You know, I don't think it's Paul personally, but
yeah.
Well, I mean, here's my argument for why I think it's Paul. Listen to the bass line on the song. The bass line is not doing anything.
Except for that one point where it goes boom, boom.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah, there's this great part where it kind of mimics the vocal line a little bit. But other than that, he hits the root note almost the whole song. And maybe that's like an Indian.
It's kind of like Helter Skelter.
Yeah, maybe it's like an Indian, like, I want to have a drone going under this kind of thing. Maybe it's really intentional. But it could also just be that it's somebody who's not as confident on bass. And it could just be John playing bass on it.
Do you think it's Paul playing the lead?
I think it's Paul. Personally, I think it's Paul playing the lead. Yeah.
And you know what? I love this question. I love that it's left up, and we're not going to get a definitive answer tonight because
it's
that's
whoever
kind
argues
of,
the most wins the argument.
But that's also kind of the magic of the Beatles, like at this point in time of like not knowing, not caring. It's Paul. This comes back to the idea we've talked about a million times of Paul and John singing together is a third voice that's never existed, right? Like that.
Yeah. And the Beatles playing together are like a fifth or sixth instrument, you know?
Yeah. Right? It just, yeah, exactly. So I love a little bit of the mystery to it. There's something fun about not exactly knowing who does it.
Yeah. And it's funny, like that shit will never happen again. Like you can't have anything we're recording now is so well documented. And even the Beatles are certainly well documented, so it's funny to have questions on something like this. But I like that it still exists, and I love that no one is like a reliable narrator. Like I couldn't actually find Paul talking about this song. Usually, you have a Paul comment on most of these tracks, even John's songs, where Paul's always like, "We worked on the middle eight." That's his comment on every John tune or whatever. but I couldn't find anything that Paul talked about this tune or his participation in it. You know,
I mean, it goes to show how little even the Beatles thought of the song, right?
Yeah,
they didn't think about it after
it was
they
a moment
they,
in time. Yeah,
they didn't think about it at the time. They didn't catalog it very well, apparently, because there's all kinds of questions about it, and it sort of has slipped by. And in my estimation, it's better than that. It's better than to have been a sort of like forgotten tune in their legacy.
Sure,
right? It's like, and I'm not sure if y'all are going to agree with me on that. But I mean I'm pretty fond of this tune. I think it's pretty.
Timmy, I agree with you. I think it's better than it's been given credit for the majority of its life. I think there's also been a little bit of overcorrection for this song, you know? And so here's, this is a, Case in point, 2017, Rob Sheffield writes a Rolling Stone essay about It's All Too Much and how it is the lost Beatles classic.
I didn't see this.
You have it?
No.
And so he says, it throughout this whole thing, he's basically talking about how great it is. And this is the few sentences that stuck with me. It's where they really nailed the Sgt. Pepper sound, that combination of acid rock momentum and brass band frippery. It's All Too Much would have been the second or third best song on Sgt. Pepper. But alas, they cut it in May 1967, just a couple months too late.
Oh,
I mean, the second or third best song on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
I think that this, if we're going to this sort of fantasy tracking or whatever, I think this song would get better respect and we would have thought about it more if it existed on Magical Mystery Tour.
I think it could have existed on Sgt. Pepper, like I to some degree, you know.
It's it has all the Sgt. Pepper like key, like when they bring in the horns and they're doing some sort of
Can I?
Well, let me.
No,
let
but
me
you're
ask
right.
This,
you're right. Magical Mystery Tour is maybe a better hit because it's like a little bit messier than Sgt. Pepper.
I think people
right?
would have
like,
considered the song better if it existed on Magical Mystery Tour. That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
saying. But Scotty C, this, I'm sorry. What?
No. Well, Tim finishes.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, going on Magical Mystery Tour, it's better than Your Mother Should Know. So, I mean, just by virtue of that, it should be on there instead of that song. Right?
What did you say about my mother, Tim?
we'll talk
Uh-oh,
later.
Oh, things are getting testy.
But
East Coast, West Coast.
But I think the thing this song doesn't have in favor of it is its length. And if you actually if you actually started cutting it off before the jam gets really wild, I really think it could have been on a double A side for the Beatles. I think it could have been a single. It could have been
What would you put it with?
I mean, Baby, You're a Rich Man. I would put it on the B side of of All You Need Is Love. And they actually recorded them at the same time, so it kind of would have made sense. But I think it would have made a better B side than that. And it even thematically kind of fits, right, with All You Need Is Love. It's like this kind of over-explosion of joy and all this.
Oh, that's really cool. I kind of think... I do like this song very much, but I think it could be way better than it is. Like, what personally, I think if they spent more time with it and developed it a little bit more, I think that's when it would have become a song that everybody knows and remembers. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was really, and I appreciate the fact that they had a good time doing this and it was more of a jam thing and they kind of just made it happen or whatever. And it fits really well in the Yellow Submarine sort of thing, like All Together Now. Like, we don't think that is a great song. We don't think it's, you know, whatever about it. But it fits in, like, the soundtrack. And when Tim spoke of him knowing this song's point in that movie and having the impact it had, obviously it did work for that. But I think that... it's just wicked fucking sloppy and sort of like amateur in a lot of ways, like for the Beatles, not amateur and for people and, you know, but for them, like if they had just took the time and got the bass line and got like a definitive sort of thing and still kept it loose and still kept it fun and maybe a little shorter or whatever, I think it would have been much more impactful. But because it was a little bit haphazard and just like, oh, fuck it, you know, it was 9 minutes and now it's 6.5 and we're okay with that, like, or whatever, you know.
Well, I
like,
think they didn't know what to do with it for so long, right? Like,
they should have worked almost, they should have worked on it longer.
But I mean, I think there's a ton of like, George Martin didn't take this song seriously.
They needed a producer. So
Tim, yeah, yeah.
They needed a producer.
Yeah. My love they and hate of there. George Martin is that he also didn't fix this song. Because even when they bring in the horns and do all of this, George Martin doesn't have a score for these guys. Like George Harrison is kind of guiding them. And that's why they play this, like, the Dance of Denmark or something. Like,
no, I heard George Harrison didn't like the horns at all. Like,
yeah, that's what I read, too.
Is that but he, so, he thought the horns fucked up the song.
But I'm saying that I think George Martin didn't have... Oh. I think he brought in the session. They thought they were going to punch the song up. They were going to give it this sort of the Sgt. Pepper-y treatment of like, you know...
Yeah.
But I don't think that... it was not driven by George Martin. I think that George Harrison ultimately driving the song home, you know.
Well, and I think that it's a real, you wonder, okay, so the what if thing, right? What if George Martin were there? What if this song did take place at Abbey Road with George Martin there?
He would have
said, how would this thing
be different?
He would
have said next. You know? I think so. I think he would have said next. He would have been like, what the fuck are you fucking. Like,
because he's so
drugged out,
George
dude's
Harrison.
Doing. No, like,
but which is
it sounds like they're
because...
on drugs, just jamming, and it's cool. I love that. I love this song. I love that it's like natural, and I love that it's just like in the moment type stuff. I've done this a million times with Tim, Tommy, you, or whoever, and we've made these songs that are in the moment, and they feel super amazing. And if someone listened to them 30 years from now, and we were the Beatles. They would say it was amazing as well. But if they spent time to develop it as a song, I think it would have became truly amazing. But all it is a bunch of, I mean, there's like claps and cowbells. It's like stupid in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I completely agree with you on that point. Like a lot of the overdubs on it don't make sense, and the way they're mixed, even in the remasters and things,
it's like one take.
The weird cowbells are way up front. And
I like these like phased hand claps or something that's going on.
Oh, there's like a weird drum that has like boom,
boom.
Yeah.
They're like overdubbing hi hats too at some point. Like,
I love all that. Don't get me wrong, but it's like it's literally like a fun day at the recording studio. It's not a Beatles production.
I really strangely think this song is both way underrated and then by a certain population way overrated. You know what I mean? Like that it rests somewhere in the middle of like this, not to say a lost classic, but something that hasn't gotten enough attention as a Beatles tune to like dissect in some ways, as especially for the time period it is. This is Summer of Love. This is 1967. This is George Harrison trying to verbalize two things like LSD and love and all that. And like there's a lot of worth to that. Rob Sheffield saying it's the third could have been the third best song on Sgt. Pepper's is absolute garbage.
Well, hopefully we can get a hold of Rob Sheffield at some point and be like, do you back this up? He wrote that in 2017.
That's a recent take.
That's a
relatively recent take.
2017.
It is pretty bold.
But really, go ahead.
No, but really, like, next time you listen to the song, listen around, like, the 4.5-minute mark and imagine that it just faded out there. And the song is monumentally better.
Yeah.
Right? Part of the problem is it just wears out its welcome.
They
need
a producer.
Yeah. Like, that long exit where they just sort of, like, start riffing on it and whatever, it's part of what I love about the song, but it's also part of what keeps it from being great.
I read they were singing Cuba. Is that true?
Yeah.
I guess. Oh, they were like putting in different words.
They sang like tuba and Cuba, and I think you can hear it when you keep those words in mind and go back to it.
But that's like, is it a white dress or a black dress? You know, like, when you look at the picture differently, like, it looks different every time. I do think there's something about this kind of being like a little bit of a case study in how George Harrison writes lyrics. This idea, I do, because he like focuses in on something really small and specific and then blows it up to this macro cosmic view. In
Are you
way.
Saying you like that or you don't like that?
I just think it's what he does.
Oh.
I think it's, you know what I mean? Like,
what's
I think
so
we
small,
see this in,
Tommy?
What,
what's so small?
I think he's talking about his love for a specific person, this woman, you know, and he steals the lyrics or whatever, her eyes of blue and her hair, blonde hair, whatever the line is. It could just be a love song about a specific person, right? But then that totally blows out. So I assume it's Patty, but then we get to the nature of existence. We get to the idea of like life and death in some way, of like floating down this river, like of faith maybe, like, and it clearly is LSD infused in here.
I mean, that's what it is.
It's also George. Yeah. But it's also George coming out of LSD, I think, and being like moving more towards that transcendental meditation thing. You know, like this is kind of the
I feel like that's a slight backtrack from George.
Okay,
part.
Maybe
only in hindsight, where he's like, "Oh, I wrote this song feeling this way about LSD, but also transcendental meditation gets me off just the same in a way." Where it's like a little, I think that's post.
Yeah, this is
being a super LSD dude, you know.
But I think what I wanted, my biggest point here is, I think we see this style of lyric writing in him moving forward. Like, let's talk about "While My Guitar Gently Weeps." I'm writing a meditation on a guitar, then talks about how the world turns and all of these things. Like, he does this a lot, where it's like one small piece of my life is an example of a greater truth that I want to meditate on a little bit. I think it's really cool.
That's so cool.
What I like about the lyrics in this piece is that I think Too Much changes a little bit, and he uses it sort of in two different ways, right? Like, he uses Too Much at the beginning to sort of be like, this is overwhelming. Like, it's too much love, and that's hard to take in, and you have the psychedelic experience, and it's just like, I am bursting because it's too much. And I understand that sentiment. But then I like that he shifts a little bit to sort of just being like, don't be greedy, when he's like, the world's a birthday cake, all the world's a birthday cake, so take a piece, but not too much. So it shifts a little bit from being like, I'm overwhelmed with this, to this sort of like, don't be a greedy motherfucker, which is like the both sides of George Harrison, I think. Like that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I do think that all of this George comes out in this tune. And I also think musically, there's a ton of stuff that like harkens later to him sort of, what I define to be like, so, like All Things Must Pass and all that. I think it exists inside of this song. Like, there's a ton of stuff that I feel that is in that. So
I think there's a weird third part to the lyric too, of Too Much.
I don't think there is. I think that I've said,
fair enough. the case closed. All right. Fair. The defense rests. No, but like this idea that this was just new slang, like this idea, like, oh man, hey man, this is too much. Yeah. Like, this is, hey, like, let's talk about Back to the Future. This is heavy, you know, like that's a line that comes up. But then, like, also, wait, Day in the Life.
Is there a problem with the Earth's gravity in the future?
Yeah. When they say, I want to turn you on.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar in that regard of like, I'm pulling in this new slang. But I'm also like, diving into what it means. Like,
you know, like,
I think they're like, it exists in the counterculture. It exists like in some regard, and then they're kind of pulling apart meaning from it. And I think that's a pretty cool next step in slang, right?
I find, man, like, turn you on or too much or whatever. Like, how on the pulse are the Beatles with like people living in the world and saying new slang?
I think by this point they're way behind. I think they're so behind, like, on this. I think for this one that I love, where he's writing about the psychedelic experience that they've had in a nicely controlled way. He's writing about the summer of love, which he hasn't been a part of. And later he goes to San Francisco in a couple of months after this song.
That's exactly right.
But flies to fucking San Francisco in a Learjet. He takes a limo out to the Haight-Ashbury and walks around the Haight, you know, and he's disgusted by it. He thinks the hippies are like dirty kids. He thought they were just like making art and doing like
becoming enlightened
and had, like, studios and stuff. And we're like doing great things out there, but it was just a bunch of kids taking acid and hanging out on Hippie Hill, which is a great thing in its own right. But it wasn't what he expected, but he's writing the song from the projection of his comfy life at this point in 67 or whatever, and having not been part of this thing that's happening in San Francisco, you know.
There was a psychedelic thing that was happening in 66 and 67 in London that was really, really different than what was happening in San Francisco, right? Like, there was the whole like UFO club with you know, Soft Machine and The Move and Pink Floyd and Tomorrow and stuff that were playing, like these really long, expansive jams that were really different than what Grateful Dead was doing, and all those guys that were like a little bit more jazz, bluegrass oriented, where they kind of like knew how to improv over these long things, right? You just had like Syd Barrett with a Zippo lighter just like running shit up the neck, right? Yeah. And like that, like, and I think the Beatles were exposed to that. And there's actually some footage of John Lennon being at some of those concerts and stuff. So they didn't know a little bit about what was going on in the London scene. But the San Francisco scene was like really far removed from them. One of the things I love about this song, though, is I kind of touch on both of it a little bit, right? Like they kind of go off into these improvisational sections that are just like, it's the only time I can think of in their catalog that they really do that, where they kind of let themselves just go free a little bit, and they kind of, you know, I don't know if this is before or after they've heard Hendrix, but they kind of inject themselves.
That is a question.
I think it's right after they've heard Hendrix a bit, right?
It's right after Paul has heard Hendrix for sure.
Yeah.
But
Sgt. Pepper's has just come out, and
I don't. Yeah, I don't know like if that Harrison's concert like, is taking place.
I think
yet,
it's all like happening. You know.
Yeah.
While we're talking San Francisco, should we talk about what they're saying at the top of this song?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think we should. So there's what John says, right? So we all agree it's John.
We believe it's John at the top of this tune. Scotty, you want to play it real quick? Would you play the intro?
Oh, the part where he says your mother should know?
What did you say?
To your mother.
So there's, I believe there's three variations out of there. I don't know what you guys have in your notes, but
yeah,
there's to your mother, which is a very John thing of the time. He's very obsessed with mother stuff. He's calling Yoko mother.
Mother.
Which I'm,
mother.
I'm,
you
know. I'm not on board with. Like, it's a weird thing. Mike Pence calls his wife mother. That's a weird thing. We all agree that's weird, right? That Mike Pence is like, mother doesn't like me to be in a room with other women. I'm like, this is a weird thing, dude. So... To your mother is one of the things that are out there. And then the other one that we probably have found out is to Yorma.
Yep.
We're all on the board with that. Yorma.
I don't even know what
that is. The guitarist from Jefferson Airplane.
From Jefferson Airplane.
Who did feedbacky stuff and maybe turned the Beatles on.
Dreaming of.
Oh!
Oh! Oh! Oh! Doing words.
Feedback?
Feedback.
Wow. All right.
There's a killer amount of it on here.
Yeah, there's a ton.
And
a
we ton like we asked for our fans to give us some feedback and stuff. I'm surprised we haven't said it at all.
You thought we were going to hit it earlier on?
Yeah.
Cheers,
friends.
Feedback.
Cheers.
It should have come up on the Kinks thing because we were talking about distorted guitar and stuff, and they are the
best.
That's like,
true.
That's like the first like feedback.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So we've got... They get harder every episode. And then we have To You, Mo. That's the third version I heard for...
What
for,
is that? I haven't heard that.
Maureen for Maureen, Ringo's.
Oh.
Ringo's lady.
I hadn't heard that one.
So I've got I've got three on my list of what they could be. I think it's the Yorma one, To Jorma, To Yorma. Like that, I hear that more than I hear To Your Mother.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the guitar comes in right when he was about... the next syllable. It's like to your guitar.
Yeah. I also heard it could be to your motherfucker.
What?
And that's it's the,
right, that I don't approve of at all.
It is the, and
a lot
they're
of
almost
does
like
not approve of that at all.
It's self censoring. Like it's like to your mother.
Really? Oh, that's like a super like the Beatles beat like the MC5 to like kick out the jams, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, or like Howard Stern or somebody.
Yeah. George Carlin.
Was...
Best clown.
I don't know. I hadn't thought about
it. I don't know if I buy it, but I heard it.
I hadn't thought about it as being a cut point. I'm also like, why do they need to be that experimental? And like, why is it not clear on what's going on at the top of this dune? But I like it.
Because they're high.
I think it's mixed pretty funny too. Like I almost think that
the team behind the Beatles actually don't know how to put the song together. In a
almost
way.
Like they need a producer.
They're on drugs too, man.
But like, there's a funny thing where it has the guitar feedback and then the organ comes in.
That was out of the safe zone, dude.
Just gets out of there.
So if you got any more feedback, talk. Make it quick.
So if I'm in the safe zone, I'm gonna try and finish this thought if I can. But the guitar feedback comes in, but it's mixed in such a way that the organ sort of just dismisses the feedback and it kicks in. And I really like that. Like, I do like the way that it's treated, but I wonder if that's just someone not quite understanding the way that this should maybe be put together, you know, as like architecturally.
I think if George Harrison, George Harrison was there. If George Martin were there, this would be a wildly different piece. Even if he, you know, wasn't there for that initial backing track but came in later on and had more of a hand in it. It really sounds like this foursome produced this piece.
This
right?
was a like, lot like All Together Now, where they were just he not there for that too or something? Like,
yeah, he wasn't.
They were just dicking around, pulling stuff out of closets or wherever. Like, it's a lot of that same stuff. Like, and I love that. And I'm not saying that I don't appreciate it or I don't want to hear it. I want to hear it. I want to know all about it. I want to hear I didn't say the full word. I want to hear the guitar resonate through the amplifier.
Yes. Yes.
And I want to hear them, you know, express themselves through their instruments in a fluid way. Like Ringo's is playing fills. I mean, he's playing fills like
Ringo
every
is
fucking
so
beat.
Awesome. Oh my god, it's so good! It's so
I love
good.
It. I do.
Is the band hanging on or is Ringo hanging on? I can't quite.
It's
tell.
All happening. It's all. Yeah.
It's but, all know, happening,
that,
man.
That's
it's
what's
almost
cool
famous.
About it. Like these kinds of jams, right? Like it's right. like they have this momentum on their own, right? Totally. And they just kind of feel like they're moving, and the band's doing its best to hold on to something. Yeah. Right. And every musician feels that way. And I love jams like that that feel like, oh, you're this close to everything falling apart. Right. Yeah. Like there's an excitement to hearing.
But you
that.
Can tell that everyone's listening. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what's funny is like this is one of those songs where we've all played music together and it's like you come up with a new song and the first time you play it, it almost sounds like this where it's everyone's kind of holding on. And then you listen back and you're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. That's so great. Let's refine that. Let's make that better. And then it loses the magic as you try
point.
And refine
point,
it, right?
Yeah. The refinement that we want to hear about what we love about Sgt. Pepper's is probably them playing the shit out of jams or whatever.
It like kills what is the life of the tune in some way of like feeling the feeling for the first time.
Yeah, but I think with the Beatles, that's part of their superpower. Is that they can take those moments refine them and deliver.
I actually thought that, Tommy, you're going to steal my thunder a little bit on this thought and you're up front, but it hasn't come back around yet again. But I really was wondering in the George Harrison stuff of this time. So it's this tune. It's only a Northern song. It's a little bit Blue Jay way. And I don't know if I'm just sandwiching in because it's like the sound of an organ and I want it to be part of things that I love, but is he influenced by the band at this point?
This is exactly what I was going to say, man. Because this was This sounds like Chess Fever, like the beginning of the song a little
bit.
It feels like
I think this song is a fucking kinship to Chess Fever, but the timeline is not, it's not correct in a way that...
So music from Big Pink comes out in 1968, right?
George goes to Woodstock later than that. George goes to Woodstock in like November of 68.
Yeah, and so this song is recorded in June 67. So and music from Big Pink is recorded in early 68, right? Yeah. And so there's no way that And I was just looking up this timeline myself as we were sitting here.
I love that you said Chester. I had the, that was exactly my touch point.
That's
it. And I didn't know if I was just being a music illiterate and just focusing on the organ. So I appreciate that you said that.
No, but I want, like, so there's two things here. Like, has George heard something from the band?
Yes.
Prior to the recording of Big Pink, right? Like demos, early Big Pink recordings that we don't know about, well, that, like all this stuff that
Dylan has just toured the UK in 66 with the band.
Yeah.
Right. And Garth is playing organ. He brought
he's doing,
oh my God, that Royal Albert Hall. That's like one of my favorite. Timmy, you
oh, I love that record.
Tim,
oh yeah.
You and I used to talk about that record all the time. We did a lot of Ballad of a Thin Man.
Oh yeah,
back in the day.
Yeah, we used to cover that a bunch. Yeah.
So Garth is playing his Lowry or his Lowry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and he's got a Leslie.
Is George thinking he's doing Garth on the organ? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Did you say get the fuck out of here?
Yeah, I mean, like George.
you don't hear it at
George
all.
George and Garth, like that's like apples and oranges.
Scotty's as dismissive as me tonight as when the Beatles presented the song to George Martin back in the day.
No, but here's what I hear, Scott, is that, like, influence, right?
Yeah,
like, so maybe George sees the guy. We don't have any example of George Harrison playing guitar. We have lots of it playing guitar. Yeah. We don't have any example of George Harrison playing organ at all before this time. And then all of a sudden we get this song. We get Only a Northern Song right around the same time period, which has is really organ focused. And then Blue Jay Way has like that weird ephemera to it as well. And I think there's something to be said of like him seeing the band, just like they maybe saw Hendrix and were like, we want to use that feedback.
Yeah,
thing. Like the idea of him being like, the organ is a cool So I'm correcting you, and you're just going to be like, I'm going to wait until he says the magical mystery word.
Cheers to feedback.
Cheers,
it's
friends.
It's our favorite part of rock and roll music, right?
Yeah.
I love that you got there, Tommy. I really do. And that's what I was going to text Ken Womack about, and I'll text him before this episode comes out. It's like, is there a kinship to George's love of the organ and
in the band?
The band has just been in the UK. And clearly, I mean, the band aren't the only people that have played the organ, but George Harrison loves Dylan. George Harrison later goes to Woodstock and hangs out with Dylan after the motorcycle accident while they're working on songs from Big Pink. And he's exposed to this after this comes out, but I think he's just super aware of this. And did he hear an early version of Chest Fever? I think that's totally possible. Like, I really do, you know?
Well, Chest Fever is really interesting, right? Because it becomes something so much more as the band is playing live throughout their career. He's playing like this Beethoven stuff, this Mozart stuff, whatever, like weird, like other folk music into it, like old standards and things like that. What are the chances that at a sound check, George Harrison is sitting there with Bob Dylan and Garth Hudson's playing the organ and starts ripping some of this stuff on the organ. And George is like, oh my God, the organ's an awesome instrument and I should write three great songs using that.
In this moment, George just suddenly gets three organ songs.
I do think that lyrically, we talked about the song a bit, and we talked about it in regards to like how George writes or whatever. And I think you can kind of dig into every line here and find something new, which I don't want to go unnoticed, that there is meaning here. Like I'm looking at this one stanza that's been kind of screaming at me all day, and it says, it's all too much for me to take the love that's shining all around you. Okay, so that's established, right? We've said that all along. Everywhere it's what you make for us to take, it's all too much. Like, that's one of those, like, simple truths that, like, that's what do they say at the end of Abbey Road about love and basically what you give out is what you get back, right? Like, this idea of, like, everywhere what you make, like make all you want, for us to take is too much. Like it almost doesn't mean anything. Or I think you can take that line in so many ways and in a number of different regards.
Yeah, but read the next couple lines, Tom. Whoa, Debo Becker.
You mean, yeah, it's too much, weird. It's all too much, it's too much, it's all too much.
No,
too much,
he
too
says, much, too much. Floating down the stream of time from life to life with me makes no difference where you are or where you'd like to be. Like, he's on fucking drugs, dude. Like, I don't know.
I know.
Hey, call it what you want.
You just heard the recording stopped.
Yeah, I crashed hard. I'm going to read.
Oh, bummer.
There we go. Sorry.
There we go.
It's all good.
Yeah, there's definitely something like they're in this stretch of trying to be really profound and trying to find these lyrics that are like deep, you know, meaningful things. And, you know, all you need is love is another great example, right? There's some lines in that I think about constantly that are just like, you know,
could be meaningless, but also could have all the weight in the world.
Right. Exactly. Like, you never really know if John was just like, oh, these sounded good when I was high.
Yeah.
Or
look at the
really
first one. There's nothing you can say that can't be said.
Right.
What does that even mean?
Right.
Right. But also, it might mean everything.
But, the line time. In that song, there's nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time.
Is
one of the deepest lyrics I've ever heard. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's like it recognizes that you as self is something that's growing and learning and becoming a thing, right? And some of the lyrics that George are doing here are reaching for that, right? And I don't know if they really hit it, but the general theme of the song and just being really, you know, I keep coming back to the word overwhelmed, right? It's just it's a sense of just like there's the potential for so much love in the world, and letting it all in is just it will floor you if you actually do it.
And that's the funny thing, like, now still at this time for George, like, you think he's a little bit more like elevated of the Beatles. You want to think that he's sort of in this way, but like the only words he have for this that he has for this is still just love. Like, right, the Beatles can't get away from just saying love, and through this song where we're like, oh, this is the psychedelic experience. Like, he still just can't be like, you know, like, love. He says love in this thing like a bunch of times. You know, the love is shining all around you. You know, your love is there for me. Like, you can't get away from it. Like, they don't know how to describe this.
Is that not what we love about them? Is the word love and like
what else is?
We love. I love that love.
It's all we need.
Love transitions for them as the Beatles transition, right? Like,
do you dig love?
Yeah. I dig love. I just like, I'd like to wrap up tonight and just say, I dig love. But no, the word love transitions with the Beatles as much as anything.
You're absolutely
right. Like, it starts for, you know, early
he
Beatles.
It's as superficial as they want it to be, and it's as deep and meaningful as they need it to be at the end, right?
Like, and it feels authentic as it progresses, I think.
Yeah. I think that too, you know. I'm also really big on this sentiment in this song where he says, show me that I'm everywhere and get me home for tea. And that is the best part about taking psychedelics. Like, I'm going to be just on the front street about it. Like, is that you get to blast off and then you just safely come home. And
the normal shit.
It's whatever, like nothing is ever.
Oh,
left.
See, that's funny. I thought that is so jokey.
All of the experiences in the world, and then you go home, and it's like nothing has changed back in meat space, regular world, you know.
I dig that. I think that's spot on, personally.
I really love that sentiment of this song. Like, that lands with me a fucking ton.
I totally
agree. I hadn't hit that. I hadn't heard that at all. I thought that was like kind of a jokey, rhymey thing or whatever, you know, that they were tossing in.
Show me that I'm everywhere and get me home for tea. Like, it's the weekend psychonaut. It's the weekend hippie. Like, it's
it's
exactly what LSD introduced to everyone. You know,
the line before that fucks up that line, I think. Like, if you put the two together. I don't love the sail me on a silver sun where I know that I'm free.
Yeah.
Like, that's shit line, personally.
So we go back to All Together Now and George Martin not being in the studio and all of this stuff. Like, this is when
they go back to like kind of this like silly nursery rhyme stuff or whatever when they can't find like the right way to fit in. Like that is a silly, that's a silly line. Like that needs to be replaced or fixed or worked on or something.
So. Yeah.
And it doesn't get, you know, exactly. I'll go back to being like a producer probably could have helped this, you know?
Yeah. Like someone like George Martin. Yeah.
Yeah. Sail me on a silver sun and let me know I'm free is a toss off lyric, you know?
Yeah.
Did you guys get into any of the covers? Did you listen to any of that stuff?
Oh, I certainly did. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about this.
So there's a couple of funny ones out there. One that stood out for me in a big way was that Journey did this in
the
70s.
Yeah.
Very, of course, sincerely, but very like earnest version cover of this tune. I can't fault it a ton, to be honest. Like I don't know enough about Journey to be really honest. But
well, it's pre Steve Perry, which is the vocalist that everybody knows, right? Like, so it's pre that. And
it's Greg, the founder, is singing this basically, who ends up in the Ringo All-Star Band later on. He's got a real connection. He plays to this day, but he takes it on, and it's a fine version. It's a fine version, you know.
Is it though?
I think it's. I mean, you want to take it apart? I mean,
can we get a taste? Does anyone have a taste in front of them?
It's a little of its time, right? Like, it's very much that like Boston kind of like that 1970s, like we're gonna throw in time changes just because it's cool kind of thing. Yeah. And I don't know. It's pretty dated for me.
But I like that they're picking this tune still. Like, on Journey's credit. That they're like, we're going to cover Beatles on our second or third record, and we're taking this tune. Like, I'm giving them some credit for that.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
And the other cover that I thought was pretty interesting is that the Grateful Dead are doing this live in the 90s, which is fitting in a way. When you listen to the song, you're like, oh, of course the Grateful Dead should do a take on this.
And well, that's right. They might as well be singing at that point, it's LSD. It's LSD. Right? Like, I mean,
I think Jerry Garcia is super into like scuba diving by like the 90s. I don't like, he's just all about like
getting. But have you ever scuba dived on acid?
And like looking at fish and shit, you know? And, like,
yeah. Yeah, watching his retirement fund and all these things.
Yeah.
And then
my mutual fund is not doing well.
And then I think the big one for me that brings it all back around, you said in the upfront here, is and the Flaming Lips are such a good checkpoint for the Beatles, period. But they do a great version of this. I think for George Fest.
Well, this version of the Beatles,
And I think that was a great take of it. But what did you guys find with the covers?
I mean, nothing as well known as that. I know that there's this British musician named Steve Hillage that played with Gong and a bunch of other people that was like way on the psychedelic spectrum of stuff. He did a cover of it, and this guitarist that was kind of like a flashy dude in the 90s named Paul Gilbert did a pretty good cover of it. I think the... Unfortunately, I think the Journeys one stood out as the kind of like most popular and most well-known cover of it, which is, you know, for its time, it's not bad. It just is super dated. It sounds like an early 70s tune or a mid 70s tune, you know.
Was that Gilbert dude?
I can't believe you buried the lead with Paul Gilbert that he's part of Mr. Big.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't he part of that Billy Sheehan?
I always forget he's a part of Mr. Big because I know him from other stuff, but he's a part of Mr. Big. Yeah. Yeah. And he's a killer guitarist. He does
what
a
was
pretty
their song,
rocking
though?
Version of it.
What was their song? Their one big
I'm
tune.
I'm the one who wants to be with you.
Deep inside my heart, you know it's true. Oh, we're gonna!
I
kill
can't believe
this
that's gonna
right
sound
now
great with together the, as a band.
With the Zoom sync, that is gonna kill the audience. Like,
they're gonna all lay down. Perfect. Yeah,
Oh my god!
There's nothing left in life.
Am I seeing Mr. Big? Wait, am I listening to Mr. Big live right now?
I think you are.
Did that just
acapella?
Happen?
I think you are.
How did Blotto Beatles get Mr. Big?
I don't know.
In one room, singing that song together.
We had
acapella.
A really big room.
Yeah, sorry.
A really Mr. Big room. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, listeners. Because of your thousands of listens, we were able to afford.
We were able to afford
Mr. Big tonight. I mean, last episode we got Kid O'Toole moonwalking, and this week Mr. Big singing a cappella.
Really
big.
It's really big.
Mr. Big, you guys are out. You guys, all right. Thank you guys. They're leaving. Thank you guys so much.
We only paid for a verse.
Thank
chorus,
you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
That's all we got.
No. Yeah. Hit craft service on your way out. Yeah. Get a roll up. Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's ham and cheese.
It's six warm string cheeses.
You're vegetarian. There's a hummus one to the left. Okay.
Tommy, you're the best. You're the best host. I'm so glad they sent him to your part of town. Yeah.
You know, you guys put me in charge of that. That's what I'm going to take care of.
Yeah. Paul Gilbert.
We all got responsibilities here. So you produce. You know, Becker does the outlines. I take care of craft service.
Becker outlines.
Anyone got anything left?
Not much. I'm about to fucking fall asleep.
Yeah, Scotty yawns. This is another episode of Yawn Lennon with
Mr.
Scotty.
Big. You guys got anything you want? You guys are good.
I will say,
hold on, our guest.
I mean, like, there's certain things on this song that I don't think you get in other Beatles songs, and that's what I love about it, right? Like you have Ringo playing so loose.
Yeah,
he's throwing in all these fills.
Yeah, really,
he's doing all this.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was a little bit of him, like, being so bored on Sgt. Pepper and finally getting
to
do something.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Right?
Yes.
And the guitar
take.
And the guitar part, too, is kind of like that. If you listen to the guitar part, there's, like, it's not so written out that they're sticking to every note perfectly. There's a lot of things that are happening that are unexpected that feel really spontaneous and, like, to me, the excitement of that song for a lot of the psychedelic era of, like, you know, Sgt. Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour, and whatever, like, that excitement really feels unique among that era of songs, right? Because so much of it.
So do you even think that this is like John breaking out a little bit from Paul's tyranny of Sgt. Pepper's?
Oh, maybe. Man, do I have some opinions about that. But
that's why you're here. I mean, you know, do you think that's like, I like this notion that you're taking us on right now of sort of everyone breaking free a little bit. I mean, Sgt. Pepper's is Paul's record.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, here's my perspective on Paul, right? Like, Yesterday came out and Paul got a little bit of a big head about himself in terms of, like, oh, maybe John isn't the leader of the Beatles. Maybe I can kind of take a little bit more of a front and center role in writing and conceptual stuff, right? And Sgt. Pepper was really his first opportunity to do that on a full record. And to me, it's the reason Sgt. Pepper maybe hasn't aged as well for me is because it just feels so stiff, right? Like, everything has its place. There's nothing in that record that doesn't feel like it was pre-planned and plotted out. And the stuff that came immediately after just really does feel so refreshing, like Magical Mystery Tour and the couple singles that they did for, you know, like Baby It's a Rich Man, or Baby, what is it? Something I'm a Rich Man.
Baby You're a Rich Man.
And the Yellow Submarine singles and stuff, like, it just, there's a looseness to it that feels just like, oh, okay. Everything doesn't need to be pre-planned. You can just get together and play music and see what happens and kind of live in the moment and get that on recording, you know?
It's also like trying to figure, you got to imagine what it feels like to live in those Nehru colored suits, right? Like that at the time. So we've decided we're not going to tour anymore. No one has ever done this. What does that mean? And then our manager dies pretty soon after that. That has kind of been our guiding light, like our father in a way, like the person that we go to and we say, like, is this a good idea or a bad idea? And he lets us bounce those things off of him. He's gone and you're kind of aimless, right? Like you're floating. You're still the biggest band in the world and floating out there in space, David Bowie style, right? it's wild. I can't imagine what that felt like.
Yeah.
Get protein pills.
Yeah, so that's my pitch for why you guys, when you get to the ranking, should put it pretty high. Is, well, I'm just saying.
So wait, when we get to the rankings? Yeah. Are you saying when we get to the rankings? I mean,
it's
going to
happen at some point.
Is it maybe time to get to the rankings? Tim, are you talking about our definitive list of Beatles songs from best to worst that we've ranked? And this is now episode, what is it, 35?
Yeah.
And so what we do is we slot this song into that list, my friends. And so I'm just going to pick a starting point for us because right now, I am going to say that this is definitely better than Altogether Now.
Yes.
That's your opening pitch?
Well, this is the one on this album.
Better than Altogether Now.
I mean, completely. Yes.
I think there's no fight there.
No fight.
Wait, do I get to weigh in as a guest? Do I get to be a part of this?
You absolutely do. Is this a better song than Fool on the Hill?
We dismiss you more than I dismiss Scotty or Tommy, but you're welcome to chime in.
Okay, great.
Is this a better song than Fool on the Hill?
Yes.
Whoa.
I don't know. Like recording or potentially a good song?
Like I think this is a better song than Fool on the Hill. I'm going to say yes.
We got 2 out of 3 right now going for
the
yes.
Because I spent a lot of...
is that your weakness on this tune? Is the cowbell?
No, the mix right, on it
Becker,
is so
let me
bad.
Just ask you. Let me ask you another question real quick, Becker. Right. Is this a better song than Good Day Sunshine?
I don't think it's better than Good Day Sunshine, no.
Okay, which is lower than Fool on the Hill. So
which is what's fucked up about our list.
Yeah, agreed.
Which makes this exercise so ridiculous every week.
This is not better than All My Lovin'. This is not better than All My Lovin'. This may... is it better than One After 909? That was a recent tune for us.
Is it better than Martha, my dear?
God. I do think it's better than Martha, my dear.
I mean, I disagree with most of your rankings. Totally frank.
But this is what happens in the moment.
We have to make a call. I am much more fond of Martha, my dear, than I think all of you are.
Yeah. So you prefer Martha, my dear, to this tune?
I do, but I am appalled at the place that you put Martha, my dear. Personally.
I know, but you're an enigma because you roll in with this tune. You tell us you're a John guy. You're defending Martha,
you
my
love
dear.
Sheep dogs.
Yeah. Have you tried to play Martha, my dear? That piano part is awesome. It's cool.
Is this song better than What You're Doing?
What You're Doing.
Hey, What You're Doing.
I think it's better than What You're Doing. Yeah,
this is better than What You're Doing, for sure.
All right, all right.
It's better than
Is this song better than Free as a Bird?
Yeah.
Yes,
I think
for sure.
So. I think so.
Is it better than the one after 909?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. I agree.
Okay. All right. Now we're back where we were. We've recalibrated. Is it better than Martha, my dear? It's all too much versus Martha, my dear.
Oh, that way it really puts in.
I'll go either way with this song, but I don't think it's better than I'll Follow the Sun, which is the one right above it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't.
That's fair.
That's a really good song. Like, this is a good moment. This is a good thing in so many ways. But, like, I'll Follow the Sun is a really good song.
Martha, my dear, is better than this song. Martha, my dear, is better than this song.
Our guest is calling Martha, my dear, better than this song, so.
I mean, yes, but come on. I mean... Where it is in this list is bothering me so much.
Well, give us
it's all too much, Tim.
Well, give us
so it's all too much.
Give us
this song sits below Martha, my dear.
Tim, give us a couple.
So it's all too much is our new number 20.
I want to know what Tim thinks of a couple movements or a couple things he's seeing on our list right now. Let's talk about the
top five, Tim. Where do you stand on those?
Oh, all right. Yeah, scroll up a little bit. Let me see this.
Oh, I'm getting a sneak peek at what's coming up.
Now these are all already done.
We're in real time at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, of the ones you've done, I can't disagree with your top five. That would probably be close to my top five. I definitely agree with your top one. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so you haven't done that many George songs so far. You've done,
because
what,
he
four
doesn't
of them?
Have
well, there
many.
Aren't yeah. that many, right?
There aren't careful. That many. Yeah. Where do you rank this song among George songs?
Right now, it's number three.
Okay.
No, one, two. Oh, yeah, three.
How many do you really think are above it in terms of George songs?
Well, we still have Something.
Something's above
I
it.
I love Think for Yourself.
Think for Yourself.
Yeah, I love that song.
I think it's above this song.
You think so? Okay.
Oh, yeah. This song is... It's all too much.
No one believes me on this, but I prefer Old Brown Shoe to this song.
Yeah, I disagree with you. That's just as much of a mess as this tune.
Exactly.
That's
a pretty good song. Yeah, it's a pretty great song. I do like that song.
I like Old Brown Shoe. But I just think that it's...
Kid O'Toole disagrees with you both.
I just think that...
And she gets paid for this shit.
But someday we might. And we
it's all too much had its chance to be the Eastern Indian-influenced, sitar-influenced song, drone-y thing that crossed over to rock and roll music that everyone could get on board with, but instead they just fucking jammed out and played cowbells and jerked off on it. Like, instead of developing it into an amazing tune that I love what it is. I love the guitar sound, whoever's playing it, and all the freedom that Ringo and everybody seems to have, but the truth to me is that it doesn't completely get realized. And it did, I think it would be way up there. But I don't think it's better than Something. I don't think it's better than the ones we ranked already. I don't think it's even close to those. Not even fucking.
And actually, I think where we just put it, I would prefer to listen to the one after 909. Over It's All Too Much.
But it's just a whole different vibe.
The decision of the crew.
It all depends on how you view the list. It's like if I prefer to listen or what I think is important. Yeah. Like it's such a subjective thing in the moment. So that's always hard for anyone.
I think we're in the realm here. I think we have have an accurate.
We didn't overdo it.
I think you did too.
Really, yeah.
I think he did too. And
Scotty,
I think this song really suffers from content.
It suffers from an editor. It suffers from a producer. It suffers from context. Like, we're dismissing it because it was on Yellow Submarine, I think, in a way. Like, I think if we had existed in our conscious a little bit.
And again, there's that piece where people are overcompensating for that, right? Like, that they're like, this is the best.
Rob Sheffield, Tommy wants to wrestle you. You name the place, you name the time, and Tommy will wrestle you.
He will have wristbands on.
Did you guys happen to find out if this was written for Yellow Submarine? Because my understanding of Yellow Submarine has always been that it was like leftovers. They basically
this is 2 years before Yellow Submarine is released.
My understanding is this was generally pieced together.
But they didn't record this knowing they needed a song for Yellow Submarine.
No,
they
just
recorded it and then had it left over.
I think they thought
this was their first step after Sgt. Pepper.
Whatever was going to be next.
Let's get in the studio. Oh, George has a song.
And this song was actually released after the White Album, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I mean, so totally. Yeah. It was not.
But
written
it's
for the
it has. But what would it have meant for this song to have been worked on during the White Album? You know, like it is such a period of time. It is such a pre sort of White Album.
Oh my god!
It has all this carryover of Sgt. Pepper's production. Where all right, let's bring in some trumpeters and a bass clarinet. And what did you call a bass clarinet? Is what you said?
Or that's what I said. Yeah.
Interesting. Boys, did we do it?
Yeah. Hey, guys, I think we did record another episode of Bottle Beatles. We want to thank you again for listening. And did we hit the magical mystery word? A couple of times we did. That magical mystery word was feedback this evening. I am Tommy. That is Becker. We are your co-hosts. We were joined tonight by our very good friend, the one we don't see often enough, Mr. Tim Clark. Tim, where can people find you on social media if they would like to catch up with you?
I am on Instagram. My handle is No Disassemble, which if you know the 80s movie, that's
Johnny
from.
Five.
I know. So
the Goot.
He falls in love. It's such a beautiful story. You guys should watch
it. It really is.
Stephanie.
At the beginning, and you were telling us a little bit, but your wife's up to some interesting stuff too. And what did she do?
Is. Yeah, so my wife is a cellist. Her name's Jennifer B. Wersey. You can find her at jenniferbwersey.com. You can also go to musicforyourinbox.com, where she's doing a lot of really interesting video production work for a bunch of different musicians. It's a subscription service. Go check it out.
Including stop animation that Tim's not going to fall into tonight.
That's true. Yeah, I'm gonna walk very gingerly out of
there's
the room.
A full on stop animation stage behind Tim right now.
He's gonna be like,
can't see.
He's like on a Tim
we are praying.
Right now. Yeah.
We are praying the magical mystery word doesn't affect. Tim, we miss you, man, and wish you were on the East Coast, but are so glad you and your wife are doing amazing things on the West Coast. And this was just great for a night to hang out and talk Beatles like we used to. And that's, I think, the mission statement of the podcast is talk Beatles like you would if you were at the bar, with maybe a little more research behind it.
let's talk just Get Back minutes, maybe when that comes out.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll regroup.
I know. I want to.
That'd be great.
I can't wait for that.
If your episode gets enough listens, we'll bring you back.
Yeah.
Right. We're only a month away from that, no?
Yeah, it's coming November, I think.
Early November?
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, it's Thanksgiving. All right, never mind.
I want to talk about what we do. Yeah, Thanksgiving weekend. So, once again, this podcast was produced, edited, composed, magically assembled by your producer and ours, Scotty C. That man is award-winning. He received the second place award for the best Beatles podcast theme song.
Bullshit.
And we have additional musical supervision from the man who assisted him on that theme song. That man is our friend and yours, RB.
Beyond Assistance.
That B stands
for
Beatles.
He's the lead vocalist. Sorry.
The B stands for Beyond.
Yeah. Assistance.
That it stands for Beyond Beatles. And you can check him out at Ryan O'Brooks on all the socials. We are on the socials also. You can find us at Blotto Beatles. Please remember this podcast, as you can tell, it is recorded, it is produced, it is performed by absolute
Tim,
professionals.
You're not driving anywhere tonight, right?
Oh, no. I'm walking about 10 feet and going to sleep.
Join the club, man.
That's my
10
plan.
10 feet. Yeah. Be careful on those 10 feet. Yeah. I'm going about 4.
Yeah. Be careful. My wife doesn't invite me to bed after the podcast episode, so I encourage everyone to not go to their marital bed.
This is not a Dr. Ruth episode right now, man.
And you know what?
Yeah. Enjoy your Blotto Beatles responsibly, as Becker is, and as I am, and as we all are. Don't forget, though, subscribe, rate us on your podcast app of choice.
That goes a big
and
way.
Like Ringo said when he was talking to Avril Lavigne back in the day of 2001, I say to you, peace and love.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Thank you for listening. Birthday cake, so take a piece for 9 months.